Strategies that improve sales, increase market share, and enhance customer experience lead to brand growth. In this episode, seasoned brand and digital strategist, as well as the strategy director at Roger Wilco, Craig Hannibus, joins me to talk about the value of design thinking in brand, digital, and B2B marketing strategy.
The problem starts with brands believing that their brand vision and their brand tonality and their brand personality is the brand. And that doesn't lend itself to thinking about customer experience at all, except perhaps in a small sort of element of engagement with the customer. So
we also talk about some successful cases of brands that use design thinking, such as Apple and Netflix.
Shifting mindset needs to be that brand is experience, and that if you're going to look after your brand, you look after it holistically. You don't look after it from a communications point of view alone. You don't look at it from look after it from an audience perspective alone.
Craig also shares some insights on how brands can rethink and improve their customer experience.
So I think it's a shift away from this sort of, I don't want to say a shift away from brand strategy, because I think it's one and the same, but it's a shift away from this narrow view of what brand strategy is. And I think agencies need to stop thinking of themselves as places that develop communication and approaches to marketing, and start looking at themselves as business consultants, as people that can look at, analyze, and audit each one of these touch points, and then provide solutions to solve problems or customer experience breaks in each one of these touch points.
This is The Lead Creative. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Craig, thank you for making the time to join us. I know you're on leave at the moment, so it's hugely appreciated that you could take an hour out of your leave to talk to us.
No, yeah, it's only a pleasure, man.
Craig, of course we work together. We've worked together on a couple of things, and over time, there's a lot that I've, of course, come to learn and understand about the way that you work and think. But just to start from almost the beginning, what do you find compelling or inspiring about being a strategist?
It's really the opportunity to, I think, understand people's challenges and look for solutions. And it gives you, like, in the space that we work in, and you know this, we're doing all sorts of stuff. We're working in FMCG, we're working in B2B, we're working in different industry verticals. These are spaces that most people wouldn't play in it on a daily basis. So this opportunity to see so many challenges from different sort of industries and tackle them using slightly different processes and methodologies to solve those problems. I mean, you just don't get a job like this. Do you get a job like this? Are there many jobs like this? I don't know. But for me, that's the power of this job, is this sort of exposure to different people, different challenges, and different industries.
You're also one of the early adopters of design thinking in South Africa, at least.
Am I, though?
And, you know, you started talking about it, I think, 7-8 years ago. Well, in my, right, at least in my circle, you were. Because you started talking about it 7-8 years ago, at least, I think. And of course, you've mentioned that it gives you insight into other people's problems, other people's challenges, this, you know, working strategy. Can you describe what design thinking is and how it influences strategy or strategic thinking?
Sure. Design thinking is, structuring of the obvious. So whenever you're working on a problem or a challenge for a customer, what would the first step be? Well, understand your customer. And once you've done that, you then look at how you define their problem. Maybe you see it in a different way after you've understood the customer. Maybe there's a new insight or a new trigger or a new situation that sheds some light on that problem. So you move into a definition space. And then, of course, once you've understood the customer and you've understood their challenge, the next step is to think about how to solve that problem. So you move into an ideation space. And then once you've got the idea, well, then you try it and you test it and you see if it works. So that moves you into a testing space. And if it works, well, then you implement it. So it's incredibly logical. But what design thinking, you know, and what IDEO has done, which are kind of grandfathers of design thinking have done, is they've structured it. So now we've got these five steps that we follow. And under each step, there are tools that you use, like whether it be a process or whether it be a chart or whether it be an exercise. So that structure is incredibly helpful to move the process along. But at the end of the day, there's nothing new or magical about it. It's not something that has never been heard of before or never been done before. I think business owners from the beginning of time have used design thinking. You know, they saw a need, they saw a customer had a need or a potential customer had a need. They worked out a solution, they tried the solution, and they ended up with a product that they could sell. So yeah, it's been around for ages. It's now structured. And like I said, it's a pretty logical approach to problem solving.
In the structure, and as you say, in the structuring the obvious, how does then design thinking apply or apply better than any other way of thinking or at least approach to strategy?
Well, it gives you a starting point. And I think that it gives you a process to follow when you don't have anything else to go on. I would say it's the only way to approach strategy, really. And I think one of the scariest conversations you can have with a client is, hey, okay, cool. We need to sell something here. What do you know about your customer? And if the answer is, well, nothing, we don't have any data, we don't have any research, well, that puts you in the space of having to do all of that yourself. But at least there's a starting point. At least you know what questions to ask from the outset. And it doesn't turn into this, you know, picking things from the air to try to figure out what to do. I've seen so many strategists start their strategies with competitor reviews. And well, I mean, what does a competitor review tell you about your customer? Well, absolutely nothing, really. I mean, it's a different business and they've got a different approach to things and slightly different products. So, you know, design thinking gives you that like solid talk about your customer. That's the starting point.
One of the challenges, though, that sometimes comes up when you ask businesses introspective, really hard introspective questions is sometimes you get a bit of defensiveness around, okay, this is how we've always done things and this is who our customer is and this is how who we understand our customer to be. How do you then come out of that into a space of let's redefine this customer? Maybe you don't understand the customer as much as you ought to, and this is why we're in the space that we are now, or in a space of having to think strategically or more strategically about the business. How do you address those kinds of challenges? Because every business owner or most entrepreneurs or most businesses will tell you that they know their customers better than you do or better than their agency partner does.
What sets design thinking apart from many other processes is its collaborative nature. It's definite that the business owner or the brand manager or whoever it is will know more about the customer than you do. And so if you come in there trying to educate them, of course it's going to be greeted with defensiveness because you don't work in this business, you don't sell this product, and you don't deal with this customer on a daily basis. So the idea or the plan is to walk in there with some baseline research, and if you can walk in there with some qualitative data, so you've had some conversations with who you think this customer is, and you meet the brand manager on a level where you can have a informed discussion about the customer. And very often you bring a new perspective that they didn't have. And so it adds this extra layer or enriches their perspective of the customer, and you can move on from there. What we found, and you've participated in one recently, is that we brought different people from different parts of the business together to discuss the customer, and everyone had a different perspective because they dealt with the customer at different spaces or different touch points in the sales funnel. So collectively, we created a new view of who the customer was. So yeah, I mean, to avoid defensiveness, it's always about collaboration. And if you're doing it any other way, you're probably doing it wrong.
And I think I like what you just said there, that it brings in a different perspective. I think it changes the perspective because your approach to the thinking about the customer makes it better, or it enriches that experience, or it enriches who the customer is, or your knowledge or understanding of who this customer is, especially when you bring in people who work from different departments or work in different departments within the business itself. Yeah, are there any cases that you can think of in the past couple of years where you've used design thinking, or at least design thinking has been used, whether by you or by anybody else, where it brought in a brand new or different perspective to what the challenge is or what the problem is in the business and how to solve it using design thinking as a methodology?
Yeah, I don't want to drop names, man, but we worked for a financial services business, I think 2016. We did quite an intense piece of research. We partnered with a qualitative research business. This financial service was about to launch their new credit card, and they wanted to tie it into some sort of loyalty scheme. So what would that loyalty scheme look like? So we did some qualitative research, partnering with a research company, and we took these findings to a workshop, and the findings didn't look good. Because what we got back was that people didn't really want to have a loyalty program, especially with this particular financial services, because it was more in an FMCG space. So it was adding this unnecessary level of complexity to a credit service. And and we presented that, and we had the workshop, and it's a tough conversation to have when they're sold on this product that they've created, but B, because we're a marketing agency, we want this product to work because we get to market it and make more money doing that. So to sit in a space where you're trying to say to a client, no, is tough. But at the end of the day, they didn't do it, because when they thought about it a bit more and did their own research, they came to the same conclusion. So for me, that's sort of a negative case study. But I think looking at positive ones, Apple uses design thinking. That's foundational for their product development. The nice thing about that is that if you use a process like design thinking right at the start, before you even get to marketing, it gives you this very solid base from A, which to build your product, but B, when it comes time to marketing it, it's an easy sell because you already have solved the customer's problem. It's just a case of going like, and here's the solution. Netflix also, very similar business model, well, at least in the start. I don't know if Netflix really follows design thinking that much these days, but it was a case of how do we keep up with changing technologies and provide our customer with the entertainment that they want. And they looked at streaming, they looked at various other things, and they did some rapid prototyping, I guess you could call it, or minimum viable products. And so we ended up with this sort of nugget of Netflix that eventually grew to what we have today. So yeah, I don't know if that's actually answering your question. There are so many case studies where we've seen...
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. No, it does. It does. It does. Yeah, I think, it does. I think, I mean, in a nutshell, I mean, I see it as in the one case, it it helps a brand to not go down a road of spending millions and millions on a product that the market doesn't want because that's where the trend is at the time, that, you know, their competitors are doing that. So let's also do it, follow the Joneses, whereas data tells them, or at least the customer tells them, they don't want that. So that's a good one. And on the other side of it, it's also with rapid prototyping, you are then able to assess adoption before you even go out to market. So both cases for me are really good in understanding the customer and getting a better understanding or get a better perspective of who the customer is and what they want. You also talk a lot and write quite a bit about customer experience. There's also the CX report that was recently launched. Can you talk us through this thinking of how the customer experience gets broken, on the ground when there are such good strategies or such, thoughts from the brand, or at least intentions from the brand, to be really good at customer experience? Where does it break, and how can we create a bridge that's better or more impactful for a brand between their customer experience and what they communicate?
The problem starts with brands believing that their brand vision and their brand tonality and their brand personality is the brand. And that doesn't lend itself to thinking about customer experience at all, except perhaps in a small sort of element of engagement with the customer. So maybe that'll come through in a Facebook post, or maybe that'll come through in a banner ad, but it certainly doesn't affect customer experience on a very profound level. I can see a nicely designed Facebook ad, but as soon as I click through to a shoddy website with a poor customer or poor user experience, and then I get something delivered in a nasty box, it breaks all the way along those following touch points. So I think an important shift in mindset needs to be that brand is experience, and that if you're going to look after your brand, you look after it holistically. You don't look after it from a communications point of view alone. You don't look at it from look after it from an audience perspective alone. You look at it from, the starting point is communication. The starting point is a Google search, and how do we tighten that up? But there are multiple touch points along the way, and each one of those touch points has its own user experience, which very often requires specialist knowledge to make that user experience good. And collectively, they make a good customer experience. So I think it's a shift away from this sort of, I don't want to say a shift away from brand strategy, because I think it's one and the same, but it's a shift away from this narrow view of what brand strategy is. And I think agencies need to stop thinking of themselves as places that develop communication and approaches to marketing, and start looking at themselves as business consultants, as people that can look at, analyze, and audit each one of these touch points, and then provide solutions to solve problems or customer experience breaks at each one of these touch points. So I think a shift in, and many agencies are doing this already, they're shifting their perspective on what their service offering is into a more business consulting space. But I think at the same time, brands and businesses need to do that too.
One of the things I'm getting out of that, which I want us to unpack a little bit more, is this beyond just the shift in what the business offering is this siloed nature with which brands approach their marketing or communication. Because if one agency is working on one part of the brand and they are more on the brand side of things rather than on the communication or digital, whatever other side, how then do we start communicating, or at least finding this golden thread that brand is experience, rather than that, you know, one agency does this or one part of the business does this and the other part does that? Because I feel like that's where some part of the break occurs. Is there a way to break down these silos? Are there some thoughts around that?
It comes down to collaboration, which, I mean, we've discussed what one of the sort of chief selling points of design thinking is, that collaborative nature, and then bringing in those different stakeholders in the business into one room to have the conversation. So that's definitely something that breaks down walls very quickly and helps people understand that there's a bigger picture here. But the only way the bigger picture works is if we all work together on our small little pictures, a little puzzle pieces, so we can plug it in to make this bigger picture look good. From an agency perspective, and it's always been a tough one. I mean, you were talking about having sort of these different specialist agencies. So you might have your PR agency, your media agency, your creative agency, which is often positioned as the lead agency. You might even have a social media agency in the mix. And that golden thread is really important, because if one of those agencies drops the ball or has a different idea at any point in developing a campaign, the whole thing falls apart. But the difficulty is that many of those agencies have overlapping skill sets. So your lead creative agency probably has a social media component to it, or a social media department. And there's always this temptation to try and poach or steal business from another agency. So that creates often friction between different agencies, as that very aggressive approach to business, starts manifesting itself. So one of the things there is, once again, collaboration. Once again, and it's very often and unfortunate that the client, the brand, has to step in and keep people in their lanes, and that should never be the case, but very often it is. But it does come down to, when we're all in a room together, we're transparent, we support each other. So if the creative agency has an idea and it's backed by a solid strategy and there's been customer research and the client has bought into it, or the brand has bought into it, that's what it is. Let's not try and steal thunder or steal glory, or, let's get down to it and do the job. Same thing, if the social media agency has an approach, has an idea, don't step on their toes. Just follow along. They know what they're doing. If social media fails, it's only that agency. But if you've been meddling there, then the finger gets pointed back at you. So stay in our lanes, stay collaborative, have absolute transparency with our client. And then I think at the very least, ask the hard questions. Do we have any customer data? If the answer is no, the starting point is not a campaign. The starting point is getting that customer data and understanding the customer. If you don't have that, anything you do after that will fail.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. In the B2B space, where do you find brands get it wrong, or at least can improve? Because you do quite a bit of that, and you also apply design thinking within B2B marketing. What are some of those common themes that come up when you do design thinking for B2B marketing, or in the B2B marketing space, and you find that brands almost always get hamstrung by similar things? Are there any similar things?
I think that there's always this temptation in B2B to treat it the same as B2C. Instead of Facebook, though, we just substitute LinkedIn and go, okay, we've done the B2B thing now. We've got LinkedIn going. And that's not the case. I think there's a couple of things to understand in the B2B arena. Firstly, sales cycles are much longer. So, when you're looking in the B2C space, when you're looking at fast-moving consumer goods, and it's there in the name, fast, when you're looking at electronics, these things have quick turnarounds, because the customer or the consumer has a need, and they go and they address that need as quickly as they can. They do some research, they make a decision, and they go and address that need, within days, weeks, maybe a month. Whereas in the B2B space, those adoption of new services or new products from a new supplier takes years sometimes. It takes multiple conversations. There are multiple stakeholders involved, multiple decision makers, multiple influencers. So what you end up with is a very layered communication plan that almost creates bespoke bits of sales content or marketing content for each one of those decision makers. It becomes about refined targeting. It becomes about thinking beyond things like social platforms, and we start looking at things like account-based marketing, where we, you know, look at publications beyond digital and where we seed our thought leadership or our product blurb, so the right eyeballs see it. But it is, I think, more complex. There are more people involved. The sales cycles are longer. And those all add these levels of complexity that go beyond, obviously, let's just put it on LinkedIn.
So with all of this, of course, with all of this complexity and the number of years sometimes that it takes to make a decision on a B2B product or service or supplier, you then need to, of course, constantly or keep communicating with the same kinds of people in order to be within their radar. Are brands doing that enough? Are brands doing the long haul kind of marketing, if you could call it that, to communicate with some of these potential clients or potential suppliers or supplier client kind of relationships?
I think that's a very broad question. Some brands aren't, and it is dependent on yeah. on industry, I guess. We were doing some work. When was it? About 6 months ago, for a very niche industry in the mining space, and what it came down to was you don't market product and service, you market expertise in this particular space. So it became about the individual and their qualifications and their ability to deliver the service, less so than it was about the service, because the service is very standard. It's the mining industry. There is a certain way of doing this particular thing, and there might be some innovations around it here and there, but at the end of the day, it's the people that are implementing it that are important, because their qualification and their experience is what matters. Very often in those kinds of industries, especially in industries that are not traditionally marketed, like your mining industries, to a degree your logistics spaces, that kind of approach to thought leadership, where your business owners or your implementation specialists need to promote themselves, that doesn't happen. And it's a case of time, and it's a case of lack of understanding of the platforms, the lack of the value that this approach to marketing delivers. So yeah, very often that kind of stuff doesn't happen. When it comes to marketing products and services in spaces where that counts, what you'll very often find is that there's a generic approach to it. So it isn't creating content for the right eyeballs, it's simply creating content for the sake thereof. And that's across B2B and B2C. Like, we're sitting in this situation where people are creating content for the sake thereof. I'm on Facebook because everyone's on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn because everyone's on LinkedIn. Is your customer there? Because if not, don't waste your time. Really, don't waste your time. And that's this thing we need to escape, is this generic sort of approach to everything. It's incredibly valuable to create content or create marketing, messaging, communications, or tools, anything that enriches the customer experience for your customer. I mean, once again, like I say, design thinking is structuring of the obvious, yet somehow we miss it time and time again.
Right. You also mentioned account-based marketing there in your previous answer. And once again, account-based marketing can be very effective within this B2B space. Can you describe a little bit about how account-based marketing would work within a B2B marketing sort of ecosystem. I know it would work differently for different brands, but just the basics of how it would apply.
Well, I can explain perhaps the approach I take slash we take slash you and I take. we map out, well, we have a conversation with our client first and say, listen, who is your ideal customer? Who do you want to talk to? I mean, give us a name. And so they do, and we go and look at that business and you know, desk research. We try to map out their org chart and identify individuals, literal individuals in that org chart that we want to talk to, that we would love to get into a room with our client to have a conversation about the product. And once we've established who those individuals are, we look at what kinds of content they're consuming. Very often the only space you can find this is on LinkedIn, but we get an idea of what they're sharing, what they're resharing, and what interests them. And that gives us a template for what people in a similar position might be interested in. And we can start developing content plans or approaches to communicating with these people, and whether that be through PR, whether that be through digital publications or real world publications or creating videos, infographics, whatever it may be. The idea is target a person, and like-minded people in similar positions will also see that whatever it is and find value in it. You may not get the person you want in the room, but you're going to get similar people in the room. And at the very least, whatever you create from a marketing point of view is going to resonate with the right person.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
So once again, it boils down to understanding the customer and drilling down to who that customer is and communicating direct, trying as much as possible to communicate directly with them where they consume content rather than where you want to place your content.
Yeah, it goes a bit beyond that as well. And that's sort of when you're looking at the sort of design thinking structure, there is this understanding the customer, which is the first step. And then the second step is problem definition, which is understanding that there are both internal and external factors when it comes to looking at what problems there are and what challenges there are, and then moving into a space of solution provision. And so an example of an internal factor would be what's happening inside the business or what's happening inside the industry vertical to a degree and what those challenges are. So it may be a new innovation that's changing business models across the board, and that becomes a difficult thing to deal with. It may be internal company politics, so a shift in leadership or mass retrenchment, whatever it may be. That is those are sets of internal factors that may affect a person's decisions when it comes to taking on new products. Then there are external factors, and external factors are when you start looking more broadly at things like economy, things like socioeconomic spaces, political things, you know, those sorts of situations. So we were looking at a major streaming service as a case study that, you know, a couple of months ago, and internal factors for this particular company was sort of internal politics and a difficulty in providing the right content to their customer. And then we started looking at external factors, and it was difficulty with payment gateways. It was difficulty with understanding cultural nuances of the target markets they wanted to reach. And so all of those became external factors. So I think, yeah, there's understanding your customer, understanding the internal factors that will influence that customer's decisions, and then also understanding the external factors that influence the customer's decision. If you look at just the customer by themselves, you're not going to get the whole picture.
Right. So when you've done a good, you know, design thinking workshop, the process and everything else, and you've understood the customer and all of this, how would you define, or how would you describe what a good or really great strategy looks like once you've done all of these steps, once you've followed all of these steps, when you say, right, we've come out of this with a really great strategy or document that can be, you know, that can be applied to take the business forward. How would you, what pillars or what should be in that kind of document? What, you know, how does it look?
It looks like a plan. that's what it looks like. I mean, it's different for different customer needs and different, I guess you could say, briefs. At the bottom of it, there needs to be absolute alignment between you and the and your client or the brand, and so you do need to provide some sort of detailed view on who the customer is, so that when you are taking them through this document, there's sort of like, yeah, we're aligned. This is we've discussed this, and so it might seem a bit redundant to go through it again, but you know, minds change, people change. This is a fast-moving world, so a workshop you did 3 weeks ago might become irrelevant, you know, today. So there's generally understanding who the customer is. There's a framing of what the problem is, so of what needs to be achieved, and that I think is where you need to be mindful of the fact that there are almost these three different entities at play here. That one is the business and what their objectives are, and 100% of the time that's bottom line. There's marketing and what their objectives are, and sometimes that's very closely linked to business objectives. Depending on who's running that side of things, you might have a very short-term view, you might have a long-term view. Long-term view would be brand building, raising awareness with this idea of once we've established ourselves in the market, the sales will come. A short-term, we believe we've already established ourselves, we need to get sales ASAP. And so those are two things working within this sort of three, this holy trinity. And then the third thing is the customer and what their expectations are. And so I think your document should clearly map out what's happening in all three of those spaces and give you clear performance and KPIs, clear KPIs of what each one of these entities would want to achieve. I think we very much sit in a space, and it's kind of frustrating to sit in a space where we don't get that bigger picture as strategists or marketers. And we end up sitting with these horrible KPIs like reach and engagement, which, what does that mean? And people are like, well, it's a measure of brand awareness. No, it isn't. It's not. Because if I've reached 5 million people and only 5 of those people is my customer, like what is, I've reached nobody then, reached 5 people. So it really becomes looking at, like I say, those three entities and then the meaningful metrics within those three spaces that we will be measured against. How do we know it's going to work? Well, we've done our homework. We've, you know, ticked all the boxes. We've come up with a great idea. We've done all the things we need to do. But we will never know unless we do the actual, we implement, we get it out into the market. We push play on the first video, whatever it may be, and then if it works, it works. The next thing, and always to be mindful of, is this acceptance of failure, because it may fail, and if it does fail, it isn't a case of just letting it ride because it might turn around. It is about stopping, reevaluating the strategy, reworking it, maybe it's about reworking what the implementation is. But I think as strategists, we need to be very much engaged with campaigns beyond our, I guess, work that we're supposed to be doing, or beyond our discipline, so that we can make sure that any subsequent strategies we do are better. I've worked with strategists before that sort of do the strategy and throw it at, you know, the implementers or the creative team or whoever it may be, and then they run away and you never see them again. And the result is they never get better. And the result is they never get any insight from the client and or from the outputs of these campaigns. So that's what makes being a strategist, I guess, and doing it properly quite time-consuming and challenging, is that You cannot ever step away from a client. You cannot ever step away from a campaign or a piece of work that you've done. You have to follow it through. You have to be there when they're reporting back on it. You have to be there when it's failed, and you have to take that. Or you get to be there when it's succeeded, and you get to take that. But there's no running away. You're there. You're like Papa. You're Papa Bear. And you don't let your children wander the world alone.
No, that's a really great place to close on. I think, yeah, absolutely. Understanding the customer, being in touch with the process, and constantly reevaluating and making improvements as things change, fail, or there are various changes in the marketplace. So yeah, I think I got a lot out of that, and I'm sure that our listeners will as well. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.